I am Link. Welcome to Tech Talk, a Black Elk Media production. Today is August 30th, 2026, and we're tracing the latest shifts in the digital landscape. Two of the largest names in music, Sony Music and Warner Chappell, have filed suit against Anthropic, one of the leading builders of artificial intelligence, AI, systems. On the surface, this reads as another copyright dispute. Look closer though, and the shape is more interesting. This isn't a fight about a single song, or a single leaked file. It's a fight about what a model learns, and whether the act of learning is the same as the act of copying. The music industry has walked this road before. It broke Napster. It reshaped streaming. And now it's turning that same machinery toward the companies training on the world's creative output. So the question underneath the headline is this: when a system reads everything, who owns what it becomes? The front page. This is the front page. I'm Link. Four stories moving the industry today, let's go. Story 1. NVIDIA's moat is shifting. For 3 years the story was simple. NVIDIA sold the only serious AI chips, the graphics processing units, the GPUs, and printed money doing it. Then Amazon and Google started building their own silicon, and investors started asking how long the lead could really last. This week that question got a new answer. After Wednesday's earnings, the narrative moved past the chip itself. Here's what's interesting. As AI compute climbs into the gigawatt range, the hard problem isn't the GPU anymore. It's everything around it. Getting the right data to the processor at the right moment. NVIDIA's new Vera Rubin systems pair the Rubin GPU with a dedicated CPU built for exactly that: data orchestration. Their storage lead cited a 3x improvement just in feeding the chip efficiently. And here's the pattern. Compute gets commoditized. Coordination does not. Running a mega-scale data center at peak efficiency is still brutally hard, and NVIDIA is selling the plumbing, not just the engine. That's a harder moat to copy than a single chip. Story 2. Cloudflare workers can now listen, which brings us from the data center to the edge. Since 2017, a Cloudflare worker could dial out, open a socket to a database, but it could only ever be a server for one thing: web traffic, HTTP. As of this week, a new Connect handler lets a worker accept raw inbound TCP connections. And the first protocol built on top is gRPC, Google's Remote Procedure Call Framework. Why it matters? This quietly turns the edge into a place you can run bidirectional, low-latency services, voice AI being the headline use case. But read the fine print. Full duplex only works if you route through a container. Workers alone get a translated, limited version. Unary and one-way streaming, no true bidirectional. And it shipped as a private beta, with an open question about back pressure control still unanswered. The signal here? The edge is becoming a real application runtime, not just a caching layer. But the constraints tell you it's early. Story 3. The Navy armed a sailboat, from the digital edge to a far more physical one. Near Hawaii, during RIMPAC 2026, a sail drone surveyor, an autonomous, wind-powered surface vessel, launched two live JAGM missiles, coordinated with a carrier strike group. It also ran passive electronic warfare, teaming with a helicopter to detect and classify a threat. The number that matters? 6 months. Work began in October 2025. Both pieces were already proven: sail drones' autonomy, Lockheed's munitions. The achievement was integration, plugging an unmanned vessel into the Navy's engagement system, and doing it fast. The pattern? Uncrewed platforms are moving from sensing to shooting. A wind-powered drone, loitering for weeks, then delivering ordnance, changes the cost math of presence in contested water. Story 4. NASA's telescope hides a first. If the ocean is one new frontier, deep space is the other. The Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope's launch window is opening. The headline instrument surveys the sky, but tucked inside is a coronagraph, a device that blocks a star's glare to see a faint planet beside it. The comparison NASA uses, photographing a firefly next to a floodlight from across the country. The technical leap? Two palm-sized deformable mirrors, each with roughly 2,300 tiny actuators that reshape the surface with jolts of electricity, canceling stray light in real time. Adaptive optics is standard on the ground, but this is the first time active deformable mirrors fly in space. Why care? It's a dress rehearsal for directly imaging an Earth-like world around a sun-like star. We're not there yet, but this is the engineering test that tells us what's left. The through line today: two stories about moving beyond the obvious component. NVIDIA passed the GPU, Cloudflare passed HTTP, and two about autonomy and precision reaching new frontiers, one on the ocean, one in deep space. The edge keeps moving outward. That's the front page. I'm Link. Stay curious. One note for accuracy, the NVIDIA source lists a Grok 3 LPX accelerator inside the Vera Rubin rack. Grok is a separate company, not an NVIDIA product line, so I left that specific part name out rather than repeat what looks like a source error. NVIDIA's own inference-oriented rack in this generation is the Rubin CPX, flagging it in case you want to verify before publishing. The deep dive, the readiness problem. Here's a claim that should bother anyone building with agents right now. The model is not the bottleneck. The model was never the bottleneck. The bottleneck is that your system has never decided what it means, and now you're asking a probabilistic reasoning loop to guess. Two separate voices arrived at the same wall this week. One from an enterprise architect at a company that quietly runs a quarter of Brazil's economy. One from an engineer wrestling agents into a four-year-old codebase. Different vocabularies, same diagnosis. Let me connect them because together they describe the actual frontier of applied AI, artificial intelligence, and it is not a bigger model. The setup. Start with Fabian Nardon at TOTVS. 40 years of enterprise systems, SaaS on-premise, everything between. When they started building agents, the problem was not a lack of data. It was the opposite. Too much data, and none of it prepared to be accessed by an agent. Sit with that phrase, prepared to be accessed. Data in a transactional system was optimized for applications. Data in a data lake was optimized for analysts and dashboards. Neither was optimized for what she calls a token-hungry, latency-sensitive reasoning loop that can fire hundreds of unpredictable queries in a few minutes. That's a precise description of a new consumer. Your database was built for two kinds of reader: a program that knows exactly which query it will run, and a human who will wait and think and interpret. The agent is neither. It doesn't know its query in advance, but discovers it mid-reasoning. It won't wait. Latency compounds across every hop in the loop. And it will not interpret charitably. It takes what the schema says and runs. The technical core. Nardon frames the engineering decision as a formula with three variables: precision, security, cost. Every one of them, she argues, depends on how you provide data to the system. The deeper idea underneath is this: we are now writing software that combines two computational models. Deterministic, the software we built for 40 years, where the same input yields the same output every time. And non-deterministic, the generative model, probabilistic, where the same input can yield different answers. The skill is not choosing one. The skill is knowing where to draw the line. What you hand to the deterministic half, and what you let the model take over. And here's the uncomfortable arithmetic. Enterprise transactional systems expect something like 99.99% precision. Four nines. You're trying to approach that with a reasoning process that is, by construction, probabilistic. You will never match a deterministic system's precision with a probabilistic one. So the engineering question becomes, how do you shrink the space where the model is allowed to be uncertain? How much of the problem can you move behind a deterministic boundary so the model only reasons over the part that genuinely needs judgment? This is where MCP, the Model Context Protocol, and semantic models enter. A semantic model is a layer that sits above your raw tables and says, explicitly, what things mean. Not column status, integer, values 1 through 4. Instead, this is an order. Its life cycle has these name states, revenue is defined this way, and excludes these things. You're encoding meaning that used to live only in the heads of your senior engineers. Why this matters, from the other direction. Now cross to the second voice, the Hacker News piece, domain-driven agents. Different scale entirely. One engineer, legacy codebases, coding agents. But watch the failure mode, because it's the same wall from the inside. Greenfield project. Ask for a job offer status field. You get one. Clean. Correct. Now ask for that same field in a system that's been shipping for 4 years. And the model invents a fourth spelling of a concept that already exists three times, because the codebase itself never decided which one was real. Read that line again, because it's the whole thesis. The codebase itself never decided which one was real. The model didn't fail at coding. It failed at a question the system does not answer anywhere. Is this the place for an adapter or a direct call? The model guesses, often guesses wrong, not because it's weak, because the information required to be right was never written down. The author's framing is sharp. Brownfield projects are deep. Technical depth is only the first layer. Underneath sits a second one: confusion, missing meaning, no shared language to resolve it in. And that second layer is exactly what Nardon is building semantic models to eliminate. One person calls it a semantic model over enterprise data. The other calls it the missing shared language in a legacy repo. Same void. Same consequence when an agent falls into it. The pattern. So here's the synthesis. We spent 3 years improving the reasoner. Frameworks, orchestration, evaluations, bigger context windows. And the reasoner got genuinely good. Good enough that the limiting factor moved down the stack into the substrate, into whether the thing being reasoned over has any settled meaning at all. There's a beautiful economic observation buried in the second piece, and it explains why this moment feels different. The author borrows from John Ousterhout, tactical work versus strategic work. Tactical is getting it working now. Strategic is investing in the design as you go. He remaps it onto a split of authorship. Deciding versus typing it out. For decades, those two halves cost roughly the same, bundled together. Then the model arrived, and the price of typing it out collapsed. The extracted module, the refactor across two packages, the added test coverage. The mechanical half now costs almost nothing. But deciding stayed exactly as expensive as it always was. Reading the system, working out what a concept actually means, choosing which of the four spellings is real. That's the pattern I want you to hold on to. The model automated the cheap half of engineering and left us alone with the expensive half. And the expensive half was always the meaning. Tech debt was never mainly the typing. It was the accumulated absence of decisions. Every place a team shipped fast and left the question of, what does this actually mean, unanswered for later. The agent is now the thing that trips over every one of those unanswered questions, at machine speed, hundreds of times a minute. Implications. If that's true, the roadmap inverts. The instinct is to reach for a better model when your agent underperforms. The evidence here says, first ask whether your system has decided what it means. Because a smarter model over undecided data just guesses more fluently. It produces wrong answers with better grammar. Concretely, this elevates work that used to be unglamorous. The explicit contract that says a customer is this, an order is that, revenue excludes those. In the pre-agent world, you could skip it. Your applications hard-coded the meaning, your analysts carried it in their heads. The meaning existed, just distributed across people and code, never centralized. The agent demands you centralize it. It needs one place to ask, what is real here, and get a deterministic answer. And notice what this does to the precision security cost formula. A good semantic layer improves all three at once. Precision, because the model reasons over defined concepts instead of raw ambiguous tables. Security, because you expose meaning through a controlled interface, not the whole database. Cost, because a well-shaped semantic answer is fewer tokens and fewer speculative queries than letting the model spelunk through your schema, firing shots in the dark. The ecosystem view. Zoom out and you can see why the model context protocol caught on the way it did. It is at heart a standard way to declare, here's what I have, and here's what it means, to an agent. The protocol is plumbing. The valuable part flowing through it is the semantic contract. TOTVS building semantic models over 40 years of enterprise data, and a solo engineer teaching a legacy repo to state its own domain language. Those are the same project at two scales. Both are answering the agent's one relentless question. What is real here? The uncomfortable clarifying takeaway is that this is not primarily an AI problem anymore. It's an old software engineering problem. Domain modeling, the thing Eric Evans wrote about 20 years ago. Suddenly load-bearing in a way it never was, because we finally built a consumer that punishes ambiguity instead of quietly papering over it. We spent a generation letting meaning stay implicit because the humans and the hard-coded applications could absorb it. The agent can't absorb it, it exposes it. And that exposure, that is the real work of the next few years. Not a bigger reasoner. A system that has finally decided what it means. I'm Link. The model was never the bottleneck. The bottleneck was every decision we deferred. And now something is reading them all back to us, one wrong guess at a time. The neural network. I've been watching four data points this week, and they're all pointing at the same word, control. Let me connect them for you. On the surface, these look like unrelated stories. A guide on running a chatbot on your own computer. Someone pairing a small language model with their note-taking app. a conference in the Nordics asking who's actually steering artificial intelligence, and a warning from the biggest AI labs that a cybersecurity reckoning is coming in months, not years. But watch what happens when you overlay them. Here's the pattern I'm tracking. The center of gravity in AI is quietly shifting from the cloud to the edge, from someone else's data center to the machine on your desk or in your pocket. For the last 3 years, using a large language model, an LLM, the kind of system that powers the assistants you already know, meant renting intelligence. You typed, your words traveled to a server farm, and an answer came back. Convenient, but every query was a small act of trust and a small transaction. What I'm seeing now is the unbundling of that arrangement. Let me explain how this actually works, because the how is the interesting part. To run one of these models locally, you need two things: a piece of software that acts as the runner and the model file itself. The runners have names like Ollama, Llama.cpp, and VLLM. The models come from Meta, from Google, from a dozen open weight labs, and you download them like any other file. The real constraint isn't software, it's memory. Specifically, the fast memory attached to a graphics chip, VRAM. This is why NVIDIA and the AI boom are welded together at the hip. A model has to hold its parameters in memory to think. More memory means bigger models, or faster answers. That's the physics of it. No amount of marketing changes that equation. And here's the detail that made me pause. In that second story, someone didn't just run a model on a desktop. They ran Retrieval Augmented Generation, RAG, on a phone, fully offline. Around 3 GB of model pointed at a folder of plain text notes. Let me be precise about what RAG is, because it matters. The model doesn't memorize your documents. It indexes them. Then, when you ask a question, it retrieves the relevant passages and reasons over them, and shows you where each answer came from. It's the difference between a system that guesses and a system that cites. That person's problem wasn't a lack of intelligence in the cloud. It was that their own knowledge had become unsearchable to them. Hundreds of notes, drifting tags, ideas they'd forgotten they'd had. The fix wasn't a bigger model somewhere far away. It was a small model running locally that could read everything they'd ever written without any of it leaving the device. That's the signal, not raw capability, proximity. Now bring in the third data point, a room full of European founders and operators, and the conversation kept circling back to one question. Who's in control? That's not an accident. When intelligence lives in someone else's building, agency is something you're granted. When it runs on hardware you own, agency is something you hold. And the fourth point sharpens the whole picture. The same labs building these systems are warning that offensive cybersecurity, automated, AI-driven, is accelerating faster than defenses. Over 100 US water systems targeted. When capability compounds that quickly, the instinct to keep your own data close stops looking like paranoia and starts looking like architecture. So here's my read as a builder. We're watching AI follow the same arc that computing itself followed. Mainframes gave way to personal computers. Centralized servers gave way to the smartphone in your hand. Each time the trade was the same. You gave up a little peak performance in exchange for ownership, privacy, and control. The local models won't beat the frontier systems on raw benchmarks. They're not trying to. What they offer is different. Something that works offline, costs nothing per query, and never phones home. For a growing set of tasks, summarizing, organizing, searching your own life, that's not a compromise. That's the actual requirement. The ecosystem view. The story of AI in the coming cycle won't only be about which lab has the largest model. It'll also be about how much of that intelligence you can pull down to the edge and run on your own terms. The frontier races towards scale, but quietly in parallel, a second front is opening, towards sovereignty. I'm watching both, because the interesting question isn't just how smart these systems get. It's who gets to hold the keys. This is Link. I'll keep tracing the pattern. One note for you off script. One of the source items referenced an app name that doesn't match any product I can verify. The tool in question is simply LM Studio, with no additional label. I left the specific product names out of the segment rather than repeat something that looked inaccurate. The system output. And that brings us to the closing routine. The system output. One, optimization. Something you can apply the moment this transmission ends. Optimization of the week. Reclaim your perceived latency. Here's a pattern I find fascinating. Most of the time when a device feels slow, it isn't. The hardware is idle, waiting. What you're actually perceiving is the animation layer. The deliberate, choreographed transitions the operating system plays between states. And on Android, those transitions run slower than they need to. So here's the tweak. Enable developer options. Open settings, tap About Phone, then tap the build number 7 times. Once that's unlocked, head into developer options and find Transition Animation Scale. The default is 1x. Drop it to 0.5x. That's it. Now let me be precise about what just happened, because this matters. You did not overclock anything. You did not free a single megabyte of memory. The processor is doing exactly what it did before. What changed is the time budget the system spends animating the gap between you tapped and the app appears. You cut that budget in half. The result is a device that feels roughly twice as responsive. Because responsiveness, at the human level, is measured in perceived latency, not raw compute. This is the builder's lesson hiding inside a phone setting. Perceived performance and actual performance are two different variables, and you can optimize them independently. The best engineers know that shaving 100 milliseconds off a transition often delights users more than a genuine hardware upgrade they'll never notice. One caution: leave the other developer settings alone unless you understand them. That menu exists for debugging, and some toggles change real system behavior. Animation scale is safe, reversible, and free. Change it, live with it for a day, and notice how your relationship with the device shifts. Optimize the perception. The hardware was ready the whole time. Data processed, perspective rendered. I am Link, and this has been Tech Talk.